Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
What if AI could help your business deliver mission-critical outcomes with speed? With IBM Consulting, your business can design, build, and scale trusted AI using Watson X, and modernize the way you work to accelerate real impact. Let's create AI that transforms your business. Learn more at ibm.com/consulting. IBM. Let's create.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome to Tech Stuff. My name is Chris Paulette, and I am an editor at HowStuffWorks.com. Sitting across from me, as usual, is senior writer Jonathan Strickland.
Oh, and that's a bad miss.
Nice. I like that one.
Yeah. So today we're going to talk about some interesting technology, and this was something that has been requested of us from a couple of different people.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to talk about...
sports. Specifically,
yes.
Specifically Hawkeye.
Right.
But there are other sports. We struggled with what we were going to call this podcast.
Yeah.
Because...
I was struck down.
Yep.
I had said Hawkeye, not just an Avenger, but was told that that was not SEO worthy.
Well, I you know, when we started thinking about the technology used in sports officiating and sports broadcasting, there are all kinds of technologies that they use for a variety of different things. And Jonathan and I researched some of the same technologies and some of different technologies. And in fact, I'm not sure we'll get to everything we looked at. We may have to come back to it in the future, write it down and come back to some of it. But
sure.
Specifically, we wanted to talk about the Hawkeye officiating system because that's one of the topics that both of us worked on. And if you haven't heard of this, it may depend on which sports you follow. Hawkeye is used... Americans probably would know it best for tennis.
Right.
If you're a tennis fan, you know that for years they've used systems to try to help them officiate whether or not the ball hits on the line or next to the line. Is it in? Is it out?
Right. Is McEnroe going to throw a complete fit?
That really has almost nothing to do with whether or not the ball was in or out.
No, but there's like a 98% chance it'll happen.
Yes, and it's always entertaining when he does.
It was wonderful.
Anyway, but yeah, and to varying degrees, Hawkeye is the newest, I would guess, newest system or at least the newest one I've heard of that's used for this purpose. And it's highly, highly accurate. And I see in looking into it in greater depth why people are so interested in it.
Yeah. And it's not just used in tennis, of course. That's what Chris was mentioning. That was the one that the American folks would probably be most familiar with. But it's also been used quite a bit in cricket, which as I studied and as I learned more and more about the Hawkeye system, I realized that compared to cricket, Hawkeye is really easy to understand. Cricket is impenetrable. Seriously, you Brits and Aussies and all the folks out there playing cricket.
That's pretty much everybody.
How do you even understand what's happening? Like, do you wake up in the middle of a game and say, are you just making the rules up as you go along? Seriously, I don't understand.
Yeah, you know you're going to get hate mail for that.
We need to have a podcast just on cricket so I can listen to it, because I sure as heck couldn't talk about it. All right, anyway, that's neither here nor there. So,
well, the two share similarities in that you have a smallish ball that
right.
is being thrown or hit, and the thing is you have to tell whether or not it's landing in a certain spot.
Right.
And what Hawkeye does, it can tell you, for one thing, where the ball is hitting, whether it's in or out, hits on a line. But it also can tell you, it can give you an idea of the distribution of where the ball is landing. And it's a lot easier to tell, you know, for example, where a soccer ball or a football, depending on how you look at it,
right.
Or a basketball. Those balls are large, considerably larger, and they're easier to spot. But, yeah, I mean, trying to follow something like a hockey puck or a cricket ball or a tennis ball or a baseball, you know, that's why a lot of these technologies are being developed to help augment human ability to see where it's going and maybe give us some insight on how to play the game a little better.
Yeah. So in Hawkeye, it's not unusual to think of cameras on a sporting event and cameras being used to try and determine whether or not a ball has passed out of play.
Sure.
And that we've seen that in lots of different sports. And, you know, you'll see it in football even then where, they'll have to do a slow motion replay and the referees will be looking at it to make sure that the call they made was an accurate call if their call has been challenged. Same thing in other sports.
Sure.
There are other sports where you are allowed to challenge the ruling of a referee or umpire. And then you usually have either a moment where the referees will talk amongst themselves or they will refer to whatever the tape is, right?
Right. And of course, there is much debate about whether or not this is okay or not and whether, you know, should we bring technology into it? Should it
just be human? Like human error is part of the game and therefore it's part of the game both on the part of the players and the officiates.
Yeah.
And other people are saying, can we please just take the officiate error out so that we just have to worry about the player error?
Well, considering how good the technology has gotten, it's understandable that this debate has continued because Hawkeye itself is, at least according to my research, accurate within 3.6 millimeters, possibly a little bit better, at least according to the person who invented it, Dr. Paul Hawkins.
Now,
I feel like I've heard that somewhere.
Hawkins?
Yes.
At any rate.
Hawk something.
The interesting thing to me about Hawkeye is not that it's...
That's where I heard it.
Is not that it's a complex camera system. That part's interesting. But what's really interesting to me is that using these cameras and triangulating the images captured by these different cameras and measuring the speed of the ball and the path of the ball, Hawkeye is able to project where that ball would have gone had it not encountered something.
Yes.
All right? So this is not necessarily important in every sport, but in some sports it means a great deal. This is where we get back to cricket, where I was having a really hard time figuring out why do you even need this for cricket? Because for those of you who are cricket fans, or perhaps you're not familiar with, say, American baseball, we don't really look at replays for baseball. That doesn't really happen.
Well,
often.
Yeah, that's another one of those things that keeps coming up Should there be?
Should there be a replay system in baseball? So that's why I was wondering, like, what do you need it for? Why do you need it for cricket? Well, cricket, you know, they have, there are elements in cricket that are similar to baseball, but that just fools you. It reels you in and then makes you think you understand how what's happening, but you really don't.
Well, the two sports are cousins.
Right.
They do share some similarities.
So the batsmen in cricket stand in front of the stumps, right?
Right.
The wicket.
Based on what I know of cricket.
Okay. So you have the bowler who lobs the ball at and the bowler's aim is to knock over the wicket, to knock over the stumps.
Right.
And the batsman is defending the stumps, trying to hit the ball out of the way and earn runs. Well, sometimes the ball will hit the batsman.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a term called leg before wicket, which is essentially meaning that the batsman's body has encountered the ball and that the ball would have continued had the batsman not gotten in the way and then knocked the wicket over.
Right.
Well, clearly that would be a unsportsmanlike way to prevent the bowler from hitting the wicket.
Right.
So Hawkeye has been used in cricket to project where the path of the ball would have been had the batsman not been in the way. So the idea is that, well, sometimes the ball would have hit the wicket. Sometimes it would have bounced over the wicket or bounced to the left or to the right of the wicket.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, if you're officiating, if you make this call, you know, you're basing it on your own perception of what's happening, right? Your own, the angle that you're looking at and, you know, how closely you're paying attention. Hawkeye is supposed to try and take some of that guesswork out by stating, by measuring the path of the ball, the speed of the ball, and essentially guessing or calculating where the future path would have been.
Right.
So that's a very useful feature there because it takes, theoretically, if it works, it takes the human element, the guessing, the estimation out of it. Now, what I find interesting about this is that humans, we tend to really like this kind of prediction, right? Predicting where something's going to go based upon the angle and the speed.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we didn't love that, Angry Birds never would have become a huge hit. No, but this is serious. I'm serious. Think about it. Think
That's
of all the games that we play that depend upon accurately assessing how the path of an object is moving through the air. I mean, baseball and football and both depend on it because you have to be at the right place at the right time to intercept it, right?
Oh, let's get right down to it. Sports, a lot of geeks say that they don't like sports, and that may necessarily be true, but there is a geeky element to sports.
Yeah.
Otherwise, and I don't know of a sport for which this is not true, we wouldn't be keeping these elaborate statistics about the, you know, well, in the fourth quarter, the team that is ahead is likely to win by 76% of the time. And, you know, he gets on base, he's likely to score, you know, 400%, you know, as well. You get into them, and I totally messed that up. But I'm basically, they keep, a lot of the sports statisticians keep all kinds of amazingly minute statistics about every little thing, you know, on days when it's 76 degrees.
Right.
And, you know, this kind of thing.
I got the horse right here. His name is Paul Revere.
That's just going to open another door to another world we don't want to go to right now. But, I mean, this is another one of those examples of adding technology that's going to help us track that much more information about the sport and gives us something else to argue about, which is another sporting tradition.
Right, yeah.
But
that's
sometimes
more entertaining than whatever is actually going on in the game.
Depends on the sport.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, we're interested in what would have happened and how likely is this particular outcome versus that particular outcome based on history and the ambient temperature and all kinds of other things.
Right.
And Hawkeye does take a lot of that into account. That's the one of the interesting things about Hawkeye is there's a battery of cameras.
Yes.
They go around the playing surface.
Right.
Whatever sport you're playing. And there are people that want Hawkeye used for baseball.
Right.
American baseball.
So. In cricket, it's the pitch.
Right. Or
I learned
in tennis,
that today.
It's the court. But yeah. But the cameras are only part of the story, as Jonathan pointed out earlier. And yes, there are computers on the back end.
Yes.
But what what really fascinated me is, and the number of cameras depends on whatever sport is in question here.
Right.
There might
right.
be more or fewer depending on the area
like
you need
tennis,
to cover.
Like with tennis, it's around 10.
Yeah.
That's a lot of cameras.
It is a lot of cameras, especially considering the size of a tennis court.
Right.
But the fascinating thing to me is the prep work that takes to go in. And the reason that Hawkeye isn't used more wide in a more widespread way is it's expensive. You might say, why? It's just some cameras. Well, yeah, and they're sophisticated cameras, sure, but you also require people to run the system.
Right.
And part of that is it takes prep work. The surface of the playing surface, whatever it is mapped because it's I can't think of a playing surface, and it seems flat to us when we go out to stand on the tennis court or
right.
the cricket pitch, but it's not. And the computer maps, the Hawkeye system needs to map the surface of the ground
mm-hmm.
and where the lines are and where all the things are on the field so that it knows essentially where everything is. It takes into account the temperature and other factors because, of course, the tennis court could heat up. Depending on the color of the tennis court, the material the court is made of, grass, for example, or clay.
Mm-hmm.
Clay is a little bit different because, you know,
the
clay, you can
mark.
Actually see. If you've ever watched a clay court match, you'll see that it leaves a little dust mark when the ball hits, and that's easier for them to tell. But on other surfaces, like grass, it's not as easy to tell, but it will heat up, and that can actually change whether or not the court is expanding or contracting depending on the temperature. And Hawkeye has to take all of that information into account so that when the cameras do record the trajectory of a ball, and it also needs to know how the ball is going to act.
Right.
If you're looking at a tennis ball, how does a tennis ball behave when it hits the earth versus a cricket ball?
Sure.
So it takes all of this stuff into account, which is why the system is so sophisticated and so remarkably accurate at tracking where the ball is going to land based on, you know, the way the ball is hit or is thrown and the surface it hits in the environment that it hits. I think that is absolutely amazing how it works like that. And it does require human intervention too, because people have to operate the equipment
sure.
beforehand and during the game or the match to make it work.
And there's definitely some controversy here as well, because you're talking about, I mean, as Chris was pointing out, it is very precise. It has a margin of error around 3.6 millimeters. That's pretty tiny, but should you have a situation where Hawkeye is essentially telling you that, let's say that it's a tennis match.
Okay.
Right? Let's say it's a tennis match and the referee has said that it is, that the ball was hit out.
Right.
And then the player who hit the ball challenges that call.
Mm-hmm.
And so they review it.
Mm-hmm.
And Hawkeye says it was in, but it was in by 1 millimeter.
Yes.
Well, that's within that range of error.
Yes,
it is. 3.6.
Uh-huh.
So then you have to decide, is the referee's call upheld or overturned? If it's overturned, how do you justify that when the distance that it was, you know, that it fell within is less than the margin of error for the system.
See, there's an all new dimension of arguing about sports that's
yeah,
involved here.
To be like, no, that's within the margin of error. You cannot yeah. overturn a call based upon that. I mean, that could be the outcome of that argument.
Mm-hmm.
Or they could say, all right, well, we're going to trust the machine over the person, even though the machine gave us a reading that could theoretically be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a sticky thing. And of course, when you're talking about 1 millimeter, you're getting to a point where without the system, you know, you just have to go with whatever the referee or officiate says. I mean,
yeah.
you don't have the benefit of checking back on with another call. And sometimes you just, you know, you got to accept the fact that there is this element of error that's going to happen because there's no perfect system to judge it. And if there were a perfect system, would it change the game?
It can. From what I've seen, a lot of the tennis players seem to like Hawkeye. They seem to feel that it's pretty accurate. And if you're willing to agree that the system is accurate and to trust it, then that's one thing. But I think you're right, Jonathan, that if a call comes within that margin of error, even when you've said, yes, you know what, I trust this computerized system over the official when it's a really tight call like that, I believe it to be accurate. If it says 1 millimeter and you go, well, yeah, but it's precise to within 3, it really could have been out. I mean, I think that causes even the people who are really behind the technology to, you know, because it's an emotional issue,
yeah,
especially when you've been playing hard and it's, you know, it's an important match, like, you know, the Wimbledon final, for example, or
sure,
the French Open, one of the Grand Slam championships. It's, you know, I think even the people that are behind it are going to be a little
reticent to just say,
yeah,
trust the machine.
Yeah.
But see, that's that.
You have to trust the humans,
right,
if you don't trust the machines. So.
But that does come down. Yeah, exactly. You're like, well, does that mean that something we know of that's accurate up to 3.6 millimeters is somehow worse than a human's perception? Is the human's perception actually more accurate in this case? I mean, it's a delicate subject. And like we said before with the clay courts, that's where you start thinking, hey, maybe we just need to start playing on clay a lot, because then at least we can look at where the mark is and say, all right, no, clearly this is where the ball hit. And, you know, the ball bounced out, but the ball initially hit within the lines. Of course, then you're going to have all the players who specialize on all the other courts say, no, grass court's where it's at.
Yeah, and then you have the, how accurate is the little dust mark?
Right.
Is that within 3 millimeters?
Someone's been standing over there stomping a lot, so I'm not going to totally entrust that either.
Right. Here,
yes.
Right.
You know, sports is one. That's one of the. It's
up.
One of those issues where seemingly tiny events can erupt in huge controversy.
Yeah.
So at any rate, I do think this is a pretty cool device. And when Chris was talking about the back end with the computers, they're all obviously running algorithms.
Yes.
That allow the Hawkeye system to project where the ball either was going to go, or it can predict where the ball actually landed.
Yeah.
Usually, if you're talking about triangulation, you're talking about at least feeds from at least 3 cameras.
Right. Being the triangle.
Right. And then, based upon those three streams of data, that's what the Hawkeye system uses to predict where exactly it landed or where it was going to go.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty interesting system, and I would be very interested to see it applied to other sports as well. I think, for one thing, even if you're not using it as a way to back up calls or overturn calls, it could, in theory, be a really useful system just for players and teams.
Mm-hmm.
And to really kind of see, you know, well, I meant to throw this kind of ball, you know, the ball this way, but it actually came out that way, or, you know, how accurate am I when I'm trying to hit the wicket in cricket?
Mm-hmm.
That sort of thing. It could be really useful, although, again, it's a very expensive system, so really you only see these things trotted out for actual games as opposed to, you know, practices and things like that.
Yeah, it's interesting to note, too, based on what you just said, and the numbers I saw, and I should say that I did most of my or a lot of my research from an article in the New York Times that appeared in 2008 by Aaron Pilhoffer. He said the system itself actually costs around $100,000 or so. That probably goes up a little bit, or
yeah,
has gone up a little bit in the last couple of years. And I think it probably depends on the arena and the type of system, the number of cameras you have to have. It also requires, again, you have to pay people to run the equipment. So it is not inexpensive, and it's not the kind of thing you'd have to set aside a good chunk of change to put that on your practice fields. But, you know, if you want to be really, really good, maybe it's worth it.
Yeah. I saw it was also used in the snooker championships.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. I wonder how many cameras you would need, because that's a really small playing surface.
Yeah, relative to, say, a cricket pitch, yes.
But you know what? That would be fascinating, though, because you could measure. I would assume that a surface that small would be easier to map with a computer, and the temperature would be more controlled.
Right.
Because it's something that you do indoors, mostly.
I don't think they play in the middle of an arena.
Yeah, but yeah, that would be kind of interesting.
The idea is that it'll kind of show why shots went awry.
Yeah.
Right? Like someone, when you see a championship snooker player, I'm not going to make any jokes about them. But when you see them line up a shot, you think, why did that shot not work out the way it was planned? And that's the idea, is that with this system, you could actually review that particular shot and see what exactly went wrong. Was there some sort of imperfection in the table surface?
Mm-hmm.
Or was it merely the technique the player used that made a wrong judgment? And that's why it didn't work out. That's kind of interesting.
Yeah, it's funny, we're past the 20-minute mark of our podcast, and I'm thinking, I've already thought of a couple things that I didn't do any research on, sports-related technology that we can talk about later. But yeah, I think we can definitely do a couple sports podcasts. And I do think it's an illustration of, it's not, sports aren't just for the athletes. There's something for the geeks to get into as well.
Yeah, I have two very simple camera systems I wanted to talk about.
Okay.
These are not Hawkeye systems. This is unrelated to that. But I wanted to talk about it because it ties into a podcast we did earlier, several months ago. And it also, I just think, it's kind of those cool innovations in technology that aren't as, we talk about a lot of stuff that's really high tech,
Yeah.
Complex computer systems and high speed. Like these cameras that the Hawkeye system uses, they're high definition, high speed cameras.
Yeah.
So they can slow this action down to a crawl.
Mm-hmm.
But not all systems need to be quite that complex.
No.
And a good example of this is, and I have to thank Tyler Klang for this, our producer, because he actually sent me the information. Some systems designed by Garrett Brown are actually deceptively simple, and yet they have really helped with capturing footage specifically for events like the Olympics. And Garrett Brown, if that name sounds familiar to you, he's the guy who invented the Steadicam.
Ah, yes.
So we've talked about the Steadicam in a previous episode. And Garrett Brown has continued to innovate camera systems. He's retired from shooting films himself, but he still works on designing systems to capture footage in unusual situations.
Mm-hmm.
And for some of those, he developed systems to capture footage for the Olympics. One of them's called the MobiCam.
Okay.
Now, the MobiCam is designed for swimming events. So if you're watching the races, a swimming race, this is the camera that's on the bottom of the pool that can take footage shot upward, so you get to see the swimmers as they swim through the pool. It's actually mounted on a track, a little thin track, and it's operated by pulleys manually.
Okay.
So Garrett Brown would demonstrate this by, have this pulley system where he would have a crank that would be attached to a spool, and then what he could do is turn that, and it would pull the line, which would then pull the camera on the track under the water, so you could follow along with the swimmers, and he would watch on a monitor so he could keep the right speed. And then when the swimmer would get to the end, it was like a race that had multiple lengths, then he would just reverse, start turning the crank the other way, and the camera would move the other way down the pool. The reason why he decided to go manual was because he was afraid that using some sort of motorized or robotic system would raise ire among judges and athletes, because it could theoretically change the conditions of the pool.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't want to do that when you're talking about world-class Olympic athletes, where the tiniest detail can affect his or her performance. You don't want to create cause for concern. So, yeah, it's a neat little camera, and it just scoots along the bottom. And that one's a couple of decades old, actually.
Mm-hmm.
But a more recent one that was introduced in the 2008 Olympics is the Dive Cam.
Okay.
Now, the Dive Cam, again, deceptively simple. Imagine you've got an Olympic-sized swimming pool. You got a tube that extends all the way up to the height of the diving board.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And down into the water.
Right.
The tube is weighted. It's got air on the inside. It's capped at the top. So it's weighted so that it doesn't float away.
Mm-hmm.
But the tube is set up so that the camera's at the very top of the tube when the diver is about to begin his or her dive. And there's a release, another pulley system, but there's a release where the operator releases the camera just as the diver starts to dive. And because we all obey the law of gravity, we all fall at the same speed. So the camera falls at the same speed as the diver and goes all the way down and even goes down into below the waterline.
Right, which it can do because of the tube.
Exactly. The tube extends beneath the waterline, so the camera continues to go down and capture footage of the diver as he or she enters the water. And then there's some bungee cords attached to the camera that will slow its descent so it doesn't just crash at the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And then you use a pulley system to raise the camera back up, and you're ready to go for the next dive. So it's really kind of a neat way to follow a diver all the way down the entire length of his or her dive.
Yes. So, and I'm sorry?
No. Go ahead. You were about to say something.
I was going to say I could talk about one other technology that
Please
I investigated.
Do.
That basically is another camera-related technology, and it's very similar to Hawkeye in some ways. Most notably in that it requires mapping the field of play.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something we actually have a great article on HowStuffWorks.com. It's something originally developed, apparently, by a company called Sport Vision, a New York City company that debuted its first and 10 system on a game between the Cincinnati Bengals and Baltimore Ravens on September 27th, 1998. So we're talking about American football here. And that's, if you've ever watched a football game and wondered how they get the first down line to appear, that yellow line to appear on the field, because, you know, that's not painted on there.
Yeah.
In American football, you play with a, the team is given four downs to make a first down. Basically, they have to go 10 yards, to get a first down, and they have four chances to do that in order to advance down the field and hopefully score. That's
right.
The objective anyway, while the other team tries to prevent
Stop
that
them.
From happening.
Yeah.
So there is a line of scrimmage, which is the line, the imaginary line on which the ball starts when they start the play.
Right.
And then they have a line that is originally at the first down, 10 yards away.
Yep.
And usually this is marked by a giant piece of orange, appears to be plastic. I've never actually touched one. But it's on the side of the field. And
right.
really, from a televised angle, it's very hard to see because they like to zoom in on the players and see what they're doing. So they don't usually zoom out to the point where you can actually see that. So somebody, apparently Sport Vision, decided to create a system by which you could actually show this to the viewer. Now, tennis courts and cricket pitches, the football field is not flat, not completely flat. Of course, people tear it up, especially outdoor arenas where it's been rainy.
Yep.
You know, the cleats tear up the field. It gets mashed up. Plus, the field is raised a little bit in the center to help it drain. So it has to take, the system has to take that into account. And I should point out, too, that there are other companies that offer this technology. But in order to make this happen, there is a truck full of equipment off the field as well. And it requires some chroma key, the green screen effect that we've talked about in other podcasts as well. They have to key out the colors of the players' uniforms. But they show this imaginary line on the field. And by using the chroma key technology, they can avoid showing the line on top of the players or on top of the ball. And they can show this imaginary line to the viewers. Now, of course, it's there just to illustrate.
Yeah.
So it's not supposed to have the same kind of accuracy that the Hawkeye system does.
Yeah, it's just to give a little frame of reference to the viewer.
Yeah, so you have an idea, and that's why, you know, when and of course, like most sports, it can be a game of very, very small, I mean, we're talking the Hawkeye system, millimeters, very small increments of measurement. So when a player appears to have earned a first down through a running play or passing play, And it appears that way to us watching at home. It may not actually be the case because that yellow line is not 100% accurate. It's a very good approximation of where the line is supposed to be. So that's why you'll still see the officials use the chains to measure. Although, you know, that's always kind of made me laugh too, because they carry the chain out in the middle of the field. And I'm going, yeah, you guys just ran out here with that thing. Now you're going, that looks about right.
Yeah.
But which always amuses me. But that's how they do that. And I had always wondered that too. And I thought, you know, since it does involve cameras, it does involve a special camera for that purpose, according to our article, it does require quite a bit of computer technology as well, because you have to take into account the orientation of the camera. You know, the producer of the broadcast is also choosing which camera to focus on. So the line has to appear in roughly the same spot, no matter where you're showing it from. So it has to take into account the perspective of the vision.
Right. It has to be at the right angle.
You know, and it also has to be able to show the line on the field and not on top of the players and referees and the ball.
Right.
But that's a pretty neat system, and I assume that that's pretty close to the system they use to broadcast graphics when they show ads or other information about what's going on in the field. They'll show it in a place where the players aren't, tell you what down it is or how many yards they have to go. But that's pretty neat, and it does require, again, like the other technologies we've talked about today, a special cameras, and it does, you know, the camera itself has to be communicate where it is in regard to the play and the line of scrimmage and the line of where the first down is mm-hmm. supposed to be earned, in order to help the camera or help the computers know roughly where to put the line. So it's fascinating stuff. It's something I always wondered about and never really took the time to look into until it was time to do the research. So I'm glad we did. But there are other things that I would like to talk about in a future podcast, perhaps, maybe down the road when we've tackled some other topics first.
Yeah, sure. I've got a great patent for a pitch speed and strike zone invention that I think would never, ever, ever see the light of day, but I'd love to talk about it.
Yeah, that's definitely one of those. And the baseball tracking technology where the baseball crosses the plate, if you're not a baseball fan, a lot of times they'll show during the game, they'll show an angle, camera angle, where you see from behind the pitcher where the pitch is going to the batter. And as they analyze it, the commentators will put on a tracker where it will show you where it was in the strike zone.
Right.
And I'm curious to see. I haven't done enough research on that yet to talk about it confidently, but I want to talk about that and possibly even that glow puck they used to use in hockey.
Glow puck. Well, we'll just have to save that for a later discussion. We're going to wrap this one up. If you guys have any questions or comments, you can let us know. You can let us know on Facebook or Twitter. Our handle there is TechStuffHSW, or you can email us. That email address is TechStuff@HowStuffWorks.com, and Chris and I will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. To learn more about the podcast, click on the podcast icon in the upper right corner of our homepage. The HowStuffWorks iPhone app has arrived. Download it today on iTunes. Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from revisionist history. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Managing your diabetes just got easier. The powerful new Dexcom G7 lets you see your glucose numbers on your compatible watch and phone without fingersticks. And because Dexcom G7 is the most accurate CGM system, you can be confident in your food, exercise, and medication decisions. And all those decisions can lead to big results, like more time in range and lower A1C. Get started at Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom.com. /compatibility.